Let's go ahead and jump into chapter one. We're going to cover chapters one and two today. Here's a good example of me using something for, that says Benedictine on it, but it's really the exact same class. So I apologize if you get a little talk about a few of the benefits of studying public speaking. It's a required class for a lot of majors. How many of you are taking this class because it's required? Yeah, look how many. It is a very, very common class, and that's just because it is a skill that's in high demand. If you look at job postings, often one of the things that it says is they want people with good communication skills, and sometimes they'll go so far as to even say public speaking skills. But when they say good communication skills, they want you to be able to talk with other people and not be afraid to speak up in front of different groups of people. The reason for that is because when you are putting together a speech, when you're talking in front of people, they want you to be able to take ideas and present them in a way that's logical. If you don't have that skill, if you let your nerves overrun you, sometimes people just kind of meander and are not able to present their thoughts and ideas in a way that is clear and concise and something. I really hope that as you are taking this class, I know it's required. I know sometimes people get resentful that they're, oh, I don't want to take this class. This is not a skill. And especially this generation, your generation has kind of been through this social experiment. I was not born with cell phones. I didn't get a cell phone until I was in my 30s, you guys. I mean, that's a huge difference. And you guys probably have had cell phones almost as long as you can remember, at least until you're, you know, 10, 12, maybe 14 is about the latest now that kids get cell phones. And as a result, it is causing an inhibition of people to want to be able to speak with and communicate with other people. And it's a challenge for your generation. So one of the main reasons they're requiring it is to try to help you to overcome that challenge. So hopefully that will help. It also gives you long-term advantages for, first of all, empowerment. When you see an underlying word like this, it means it's one of the vocabulary terms. Here's a hint for you. On every quiz, there is a matching section, and usually it's matching of vocab terms and there's usually five. So I randomly pick those from the slides, and then you have to know the right definitions. If you see those, that's an indication for you. So here's a good example of empowerment. When my grandmother passed away, she had three living kids. There was my Uncle Don, who was the oldest, and then there's my dad, and then they had a younger sister, and they did have another brother who passed away in a motorcycle accident before that, but there was three living kids still. So technically at a funeral, usually it's the oldest sibling's job to do like the eulogy or to share the life sketch. Those are usually the two common speeches at a funeral, life sketch. My Uncle Don was scared to death of public speaking. There was no way, even though it was like all pretty much family and friends, there was no way he was going to get up at his own mother's funeral. In a way, I feel sorry for him because I feel like that is, you know, your mother should be somebody that you love and adore, and you would want to give a good speech like that. He instead pushed it on my dad, which my dad was fine because I think I told you that he taught at ASU for a long time, so he was very skilled in public speaking. Both my parents were good public speakers, and so my dad was fine with that, and he did the eulogy for my grandmother and handled it. But I feel sad that my Uncle Don didn't feel empowered enough to be able to do that for his own mom. Second one here, employment. Like I said, it is on all those job application things or on the postings. Here's a good story of something of a friend of mine, a man I know. His name's Richard Bagley. He worked for Honeywell here in town. He's now works for Microsoft, but when he was working for Honeywell, he was asked to give a presentation for his team by the manager of the project to kind of an update. And it went so well, he was very comfortable in public speaking. He went so well that his manager said, you know, I was supposed to give basically the same presentation to my administrator of team next week. Would you just come and do that same thing because you did so well? Richard Bagley said, sure, I will do that. And so he went the next week and gave the presentation, and it went so well that they asked him to give a different presentation for the entire management of Honeywell. And within like a few months, he was that was that they changed his job. That was his job, was to deliver presentations, and they were flying him all over the country to different Honeywell places, and they doubled his salary, you guys. So it's a definitely a skill, and it's not a skill that people a lot of people possess to do it very well. So employment, it can benefit your employment if it's a skill that you. Let's go ahead and move on to our next slide here. All right, your textbook does talk a little bit about the heritage of public speaking, giving you a little bit of background just so you understand what we are going to be talking about. Some of these things we're still teaching. So in 4th century BC, this is what's called the golden age of rhetoric. Who's got a cell phone or got the internet available to them? Will you look up the definition of rhetoric, please? Who else has got? We've got two other words on this. Let's look up the definitions. Will you look up declamation? Will you do elocution for us? Let's look up those definitions. Okay, what's rhetoric?
The art of effective or persuasive speaking or writing, especially the use of figures or speech in other compositional techniques.
I'm just going to abbreviate it. Okay, who's got declamation?
Speech or writing of rhetorical or rhetorical event.
Device. So read it one more time.
The speech or writing of rhetorical event or device.
Declamation sounds like a negative word. That might have a negative connotation. Declamation there.
Declamation.
It's similar to a word that would be.
It sounds like you're exclaiming something. It's very close to that one, but it definitely has a different meaning, and it's actually a comp kind of a competition kind of thing that people still do. Okay, elocution.
The skill of clear and expressive speech, especially of distinct pronunciation and articulation.
Okay, I know this might date me. Has anybody in here seen the Anne of Green Gables movies? Okay, that really dates me. So Anne of Green Gables in the book, she has one of the things she likes to do is to deliver speeches, poetry, whatever. Like sometimes I've seen song lyrics, there's parts of essays, and they will basically give this, and even if they were not the ones that wrote it, they will deliver it. So, and sometimes, like I said, it's a competition to see who can deliver it the best. And a lot of times, one of the things they're judging you on is the elocution.
Is that what they say? Like, as the ways make way towards the publisher that sonnet from Shakespeare, that'd be declamation.
If you were delivering, yeah, that's an example. That's something that would be given as part of declamation. Yeah. Okay. So let's go back to rhetoric up here. So obviously, in this time frame, no TV, no radio, no media or technology basically that delivers entertainment, right? So how do they get their entertainment? One of the things they did was they would get together and they would hear speeches, they would debate, they would see plays, things like that. So that was a major form of communication. And so they started studying, well, how can I deliver this speech or how can I debate better? And so they began studying that. So we have here Aristotle, kind of a bust of him, and he's one of the ones who studied and gave ideas of how do you become an effective speaker? How do you entertain people better? In other words, that makes sense? Okay, then we get to the Roman era, 500 BC, and the Greeks here, they basically adapt it, and we still are using a lot of these same techniques in today's society. Even in the 19th century, which means the 1800s, so the 1800s, think about in your history classes, you remember learning about how Abraham Lincoln would have these debate competitions? That was like a form of declamation. And what they were doing is they were debating and trying to win over the audience. A lot of it's related to politics sometimes. And nowadays we have, this new era of speech making because of technology. Technology is changing things dramatically. People are not as patient for long form types of speeches. We have people that, if you don't look good on screen, that's a, you have to look good and know how to present yourself on screen. You need to know how to create like a sound bite, all those kinds of things. And so there are different, it's a new era of speech making because of technology. All right. Part of the process of understanding public speaking is based on the communication model. Okay, who's had COM 100 or COM 110? Okay, so you already have reviewed this model. You remember it. It's one of the main objectives from the class that you should understand. So let's talk a little bit about the different components of the model for the rest of you. And then we'll talk about how it relates to. So we have here on the left, they've got speaker. I'm going to put S. And the S has actually multiple meanings. It could be speaker, it could be sender. Sometimes they say encoder. Sometimes they even say, let's see, there's one other one that'll come to my mind in a minute. But so there's multiple labels that they use. Over here we have, on the screen, they have listener. Most places use R for receiver, but we do use listener sometimes. And sometimes they're used decoder. So now both the receiver and the sender are doing the same job at the same time. While I'm talking to you, I am looking at you and I'm seeing how engaged you are. So you are sending me messages by, you know, what you're doing. I can see if you're looking at me, I can tell that. Or if you're on your phone, I can tell that. If somebody's asleep on the back row, I've seen that happen. I can tell that. And so as a result, you at the same time are sending me messages and you're as you're receiving a message. Does that make sense? Okay. So what does the sender do? Of course, they send a message. And what does the receiver do? They send feedback. Now, how do they send that? Here you've got it, where the message is kind of, you can kind of tell that message is going through a channel. I kind of like to draw like a little tunnel thing here. And basically this is a mode or a means of how the message gets from one place to another. So what kind of mode or means am I using right now to deliver this lecture? What kind? Verbal speech, right. You'll notice that I'm also using the whiteboard. So this is another type of channel. I'm visual, kind of, and the more channels that you use at the same time, then the more effective you're going to be communication-wise. So let's say we have a parent who has to go to work. They've got maybe their, you know, 12-year-old kid. They're leaving home and they want the kid while they're gone to do a job or a chore. So they might say verbally to the kid, hey, well, I'm gone, will you unload the dishwasher or whatever it is. And then I've left you a reminder on the table, or they'll send them a text later. Those multiple channels are supposed to help you be more effective. Not necessarily nag, as in that potentially could be interpreted that way for my example, but multiple channels usually means more effective communication. All right, in the middle we have, here is a lightning bolt. Most textbooks just kind of have this burst of things, and it's called noise or interference, because sometimes things make it challenging to understand what is being talked about, what's being said. Sometimes people are distracted with what's going on in their minds, or sometimes there is something going on in the environment. I remember one time I was lecturing at MCC, giving, in fact, the same lecture pretty much on the model of communication, and they were building a new building next door. And it was just like right outside our classroom door, and they started jackhammering. And there was like no way that my students could like even hardly hear me. It was rough. So I ended up having just to dismiss class, hear what I was saying. But there's lots of things that cause noise or interference. Sometimes they're within your body, like if you're sick. Have you guys ever noticed when it's sick, maybe it's harder to pay attention or to focus? Might be psychological, might be environmental. There's a variety of things. Okay, so these are the main components. There's one other one, and that is the environment in which everything takes place, which is, this is called the context. So where you're at makes a difference. If my boss walked into the room, the context of who's here, that would make a difference. I would, you know, try to be a lot more mindful and making sure I'm paying attention to what my boss is, you know, signaling or what they are communicating to me. Sometimes the environment, like being in here in this classroom, would be different. Our lecture would be different if we were outside in the heat, right? So the whole environment can make a big difference. Now, let's look at the definitions. I'll let you write these all down. Again, there's different components of this model. And like I said, the source and the receiver, I promise I won't try to trick you on a quiz. Won't ever, like, there's different, that's the other word I couldn't remember, source. There's just so many different models, like every textbook has a different model of communication. So it's good for you to be aware of that, and that there might be slightly different labels. Again, these slides are available on Canvas, so if you're not one to want to write everything down, they're on the second page of the module, the lecture page, at the very bottom. It says PowerPoint slides without lecture. So you can open that up.
Oh, as one point, you said that people have, you know, have the long attention spans. That's true. If you, that's the one thing that I think I was telling to my parents. I said, you know, I foresee the future, because, you know, I was the one that sort of said, you know, you got to stop buying VHS tapes because DVDs are on the way and they're going to replace it. And, you know, and I said, you have to replace the cassette tapes because the CDs are out now. And so now I'm saying Bezos is the way to go for want to listen to music. So it's, you know, you can spend $8 a month if you have Prime and you get all the songs that were ever produced and all songs that will ever be produced. That's the way to go for the songs now. But so I said the cable news is on its way out, because now that they have the X rating and they have like two hours. They can speak 2.5 hours, I mean, nonstop. But I noticed that even though you can speak almost indefinitely on YouTube, now it's very popular. They have the shorts. They have the short things. They have the shorts that take less than a minute.
Right.
They have all these shorts things that they're doing now.
Yeah, there's different lengths of the. They're doing that also on like Instagram and Facebook too. They have the shorter things.
Well, they call it short takes or something.
Yeah.
So if you like the short take, you can go to that channel and you hear the longer version of it.
Yeah. All right. Now I want you to look at our model again. This is where you have one person talking to one person, right? So when we get to public speaking, what's the primary difference? One person to many people. So can you imagine, like, if I added a whole bunch of circles, I'd say we added one circle for each of you, and then we had to each of you and the feedback coming from each of you, how complicated that would get. And this, it legitimately is a much more complicated process to deliver, you know, public speaking, because it's exacerbated by the number of, so that makes it very tricky. And we'll be talking about, you know, how do we communicate clearly to everybody and try to make sure we're very clear. Okay, so here's some of the other differences. Obviously, public speaking, you need to plan it out so that you can address the issues. When you have a group of people, not everybody has the same frame of reference, the same background. They don't necessarily understand the same concepts, the same vocabulary, all of that stuff. So you have to plan in advance how you can be as effective as possible. Second one, public speaking is more formal usually. Now, it doesn't mean it's never relax. There are definitely times, like, even we would consider like a comedian performing, that you know, comes across usually with a much more relaxed tone, but that is still a form of public speaking. But that's a very high level skill to be able to deliver stand-up comedy. The last one here, clearly defined roles of speaker and listener. Usually in a public speaking setting, people know if they're part of the audience or if they are the speaker. Now, I have been in audiences, person running the show says, okay, we're going to just call people out of the audience. We want you to come up and share your thoughts on this subject for, you know, 3 to 5 minutes. That's called impromptu speaking. Very challenging. Most people get extremely nervous and they ramble on, and it's not usually very effective, but sometimes when people don't plan meetings very well, that can end up happening. So hopefully you're never put in that situation. We will talk later in the semester briefly about impromptu speaking, and I'll give you a little formula and I'll have you practice it once, like for a minute. But I'll give you a topic and everything. So don't worry about it. It should go well. But those are the main differences between regular conversation and giving a speech. Okay, let's move on to chapter 2. That's the good thing about this textbook, nice short chapters. All right. This chapter is understanding your nervousness. Why are you anxious? If you are struggling with anxiety with public speaking, if you feel uncomfortable, particularly if you haven't had a lot of experience. Most people might feel nervous, but these are the common reasons. Textbook has a lot of them. I don't know if I'm going to go through each of them individually, but Maybe pick out the ones that you resonate with the most, and to jot down fear, humiliation is probably, or getting embarrassing themselves. That's probably the most common one I do hear. Not being prepared. That makes a huge difference, you guys. Being well prepared, all the difference. Some people just worry about how they might look. Lots of the overall feel of fear of failure. That's the bottom one here. See that a lot. Just nobody likes to fail. And I did read in the textbook, it says that those who might be, who consider themselves perfectionists, a lot of times they will feel higher anxiety because they want to perform well. That will cause them to feel like, oh, they might fail. Now, most of you are probably somewhat inexperienced. So I want you to understand that your nervousness is normal. If you are inexperienced, it's totally normal. Even I sometimes feel nervous, and I, like I said, I've been teaching college and public speaking for my living for over 15 years now. It's tricky. I have to just learn how to manage it and just keep moving on. I like this quote by George Jessel: the human brain starts working the moment you were born and never stops until you stand up to speak in public. A lot of times, yeah, your mind just goes blank and you can't remember like the name of your sibling, or you can't remember where you live, or just crazy things. So here's what's happening inside your body that might cause that to happen, or what might cause your brain to go blank, or other common symptoms. First of all, your brain will release extra adrenaline. Do we have any athletes in here? So extra adrenaline, usually athletes, they want that. So they want to be a little bit nervous before a game or a match or something like that because they want that extra adrenaline. So that's something they tap into. It might be helpful for you to know that. Second one, increased blood flow. Your heart's probably going to pound a little bit faster, so it's going to push that blood through your veins faster. Your pupils are probably going to dilate. There's increased endorphins that, because you're worried, your body's worried, so it's going to try to maybe block any potential pain. And there, like I said, increased heart rate here. Those are the common things. Now, it's good to read through these, because the next thing you would do is try to understand what your body is doing, is that it's trying to help you. Those biological reactions are helping to increase your energy level, and they're making your brain more aware of what's going on, so hopefully that you will perform better. So it's not necessarily a bad thing that your body is doing this to you. So what you need to do is either reframe, as they talk about in Calm 100, or relabel your feelings. So instead of saying that you feel nervous, maybe just change that word to I'm excited, my body feels like it, you know, on I'm excited a little bit. Instead of edgy, you're eager. So sometimes your word choice can help you to help your brain to manage that a little bit better. A lot of this, you guys, is going to be head game for you. So you need to be prepared in talking positively to yourself and get in a good headspace for public speaking, okay? And then if you have that negative self-talk going, it might make you struggle a little bit more. So start thinking about that, you know, having that positive dialogue going on.
Oh, Owen, I'm not an athlete, but I'm a big fan of this movie called The Cutting Edge. In that movie, the Doug Dorsey, he's the hockey player. He gets injured and he can't do hockey play anymore. So he tries to become a figure skater, and then when they try to compete, he throws up. And she goes, why'd you throw up? I always get nervous before a game. And then he says what he says. And he says, we'll pass. But I mean, the worst it was, I scored so many goals.
You actually perform better. Yeah, I remember that movie. That's a great movie. There are like three of them, I think.
Yeah, well, the first one is the one worth watching.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, if I'm too fast, by the way, on a slide, tell me to slow down. I don't mind. You guys free that. Rein me in. Okay. So what can you do to build your confidence? Well, the best thing to do is to know kind of what your apprehension style is and be able then to address it. So here are the standard styles of apprehension that people usually experience. Some people get confrontational, where they might feel nervous, so they're going to like head on, go at it. And they're going to, some people are inflexible, like they don't want to change, they don't want to do something different, They just want to be comforted with what they know and they understand. The average apprehension style is just to kind of feel nervousness, maybe butterflies in the stomach, maybe a little bit of sweat, raised kind of heart rate, but you're still able to function and get up there and do it. The last one, insensitive, and this is for like a professional public speaker, you know, somebody who goes on tour and like this is what they do. So they probably earn, you know, lots of money going around and giving speeches, and they don't feel very much nervousness anymore because they have their speeches like down cold turkey. Like they like could deliver that speech anywhere, anytime, and they are so well rehearsed that they just don't feel the nerves anymore. But so these are the main ones. Just kind of maybe think to yourself what you might be. Start thinking, how can I take advantage of my apprehension style and work with it. Here are some of the other tips. There's a couple different slides. Again, you don't need to write all of these down. Just find the ones maybe you think that you'd like to try or you think might help you, because there's way too many for any one person to use. So pick and choose what you think might work for you. Know your audience. Again, we'll talk about this because, you know, the speech you would give to maybe some elementary school kids would be different than to senior student citizens, right? So you need to know in advance who your audience is. And when you like show up to a speech, probably need to look and say, okay, is this who I was thinking was going to be here? So knowing your audience so you can adapt your speech is important. Of course, do not procrastinate. If you are a procrastinator, this is going to be maybe one of the more challenging things because it'll make you more nervous if you're not well prepared. So I am going to be having you work on speech outlines in advance, and I'm going to like require you to have a rough draft. So hopefully by me requiring that, it will eliminate some procrastination. But you procrastinators out there, and I can relate because I procrastinate myself sometimes. Just heads up on this one. Select an appropriate topic. The more comfortable you are, the more you know about your topic in advance, the less you will be nervous about it. So think about subjects that you know a lot about. Like, how long could you talk about maybe your favorite TV show or your favorite movie? That kind of comfortable, or maybe you have a favorite book, or maybe your major. If you know what your major is and you've taken several classes, that might be a good subject matter to choose from. Something that you really love. Like I lived in London for a year and a half, and I probably go and visit about every 3 to 5 years. I could talk about London because it's a subject I love and I appreciate a lot. So when you're choosing topics, for the most part, I'm going to just guide you into a specific area. Like your first speech with an outline is called the three object speech. And I want you to choose three objects that you have that share that help us to understand you as a person better. So you get to choose those objects, so you can start thinking about that. The speech after that, the critique speech, you're going to be critiquing like your favorite movie or TV show or book. I have lots of athletes over, like I said, at Benedictine, so I let them choose like sports teams like that. So it could be an album. So I'm gonna like guide you a little bit. There's only one speech where I provide a list of 50 or so topics and you have to choose from the list. And that's two. That's the persuasive speech, and it basically just helps to eliminate conflict in class. So I do that on purpose. But the informative speech, I let you choose pretty much anything you want. And your last speech, the tribute speech, you speak about a person that you want to speak about. So hopefully that helps. Be prepared, be organized, know your introduction and conclusion. I'm going to make you fully write out your introduction and your conclusion and your outlines so that you will know them well. I don't want you to read it word for word, but I do want you to have thought it through well so that you know what to say. And then from there on out, I want you to maybe speak a little bit more with just basic notes. Make your practice at home real. If you don't have like something, maybe a higher countertop. Some bathrooms and kitchens have higher counters that might help you. If you don't have that, you can take a chair, turn it backwards, and it's about the right size if you have like a dining room chair or something like that, or maybe even a recliner. Some of those are a little bit. So make your practice real. Make it feel like you're kind of, and have somebody like maybe a roommate, family member or somebody have them sit there, and maybe having another person listening as you practice, it might help a little bit. See if you can hit the right timing at home. Make sure you're breathing. So that's sad to say, but sometimes we do that. Channel your nervous energy. That's one of the tips I gave you. Sometimes your nervous energy will come out in your feet, sometimes in your hands. You'll fidget. As you figure out what that nervous energy is, it'll help you to do better. Okay, more things to do. Visualize your success. Again, like I said, a lot of this is in your head. Be prepared for that in this class. Give yourself a mental pep talk. Focus on what you want to say, not how you feel like inside your body, like your nerves. Look for a positive listener support. So in the classroom, if you can get to know somebody, and when you're giving your speeches, maybe look to them regularly, that will help because they will be, you know, rooting you on. Seek out other speaking opportunities, get some practice in. If that's one thing you could do, I don't know how, if you'll, in other classes, maybe you'll have a presentation to give, that might help. After speaking, focus on what you've accomplished and maybe what progress you're making with your grades.